And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Let's get right back into the news. If you're concerned about logging in our national forests, you should also be alarmed at the rape of the magnificent kelp forests that grow off the Pacific coast. Kelp is used in cosmetics, in health supplements, and in emulsifiers for ice cream, that is if you get the cheap kind. Kelp is also used to feed abalone grown in aquaculture farms. Most of these abalone are shipped as babies to Japan, where they're considered a delicacy. Some of the kelp communities cut by hand, but large mechanical kelp harvesters rip the kelp out by its holdfast and clear-cut entire kelp beds. Kelp is one of the fastest-growing plants in the world and can grow a foot and a half a day in the summertime, but in the wintertime, commercial harvesting ravages kelp forests that are already depleted by winter storms. Even if the kelp grows back quickly, the hundreds of species that live in the kelp forest don't. Commercial harvesters are making tons and tons of kelp out of the forest every day, and the new aquaculture businesses are starting up and down the California coast. Divers, fishermen, and sailors are all saying, where's the kelp gone? Both the State Department of Fish and Game and the federal government have the authority to regulate kelp harvesting within the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary and elsewhere in California, but only the state of California has regulations, and these are so lax they're laughable. Of course, there is no enforcement. These regulations have come up for review once every 5 years, and this review will happen this coming summer. The federal government is drafting recommendations and is now accepting public comment. Learn more about kelp harvesting and voice your concerns at a free video information and public comment session Thursday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Patagonia store, 415 River Street in Santa Cruz, California. And if you'd like more information, you can go to www.birdingbyboat.org and click on Epicenter. Again, is www.birdingbyboat.org and click on Epicenter. The draft of the federal recommendations are available at the Monterey Bay Sanctuary Office, 299 Foam Street in Monterey, California. Their phone number, 831-647-4210. That's 831-647-4201. Once again, that meeting for information, a free video, and public comment preparation session is February 3rd, 7 p.m. at the Patagonia store, 415 River Street in Santa Cruz, California. International news. Nepal has become a safe haven for wildlife contraband, although the government of Nepal is sensitive to conservation issues and is working to protect wildlife and natural resources. The illegal trade in bones, horns, hides, musks, and other organs extracted from endangered animals like the royal Bengal tiger, elephants, rhinoceroses, Tibetan antelope, musk deer, spotted and snow leopards, and the critically endangered python has often been reported in Nepal. A newly released investigative study on the illegal trade in wildlife organs in and through Nepal has found that in most cases, Nepali territory acts as a safe passage or gateway to ferret out the contraband to and from China's Tibetan Autonomous Region in the north and India in the west, south, and east. Occurrences of such illegal trade have been reported even in the capital city. The report CITES Compliance in Nepal says, a joint study by British biologist Colin Pringley, British lawyer Chris Murgatroyd, and Mangan Manshaka, General Secretary of Nepal Forum for Environmental Journalists, has uncovered clues about the modus operandi of the trade in these wildlife parts. Nepal's open border with India, lack of proper legislation, and coordination between the concerned authorities continue to hinder the task of combating illegal trade in endangered and threatened species like tiger, rhino, leopards, and other animals, the report states. Huge amounts of wildlife organs are transported to China and India from and through Nepal, the report states. Nepal's open borders, we already said that. The report also blamed geographical intricacy and the inaccessibility along the Tibet-Nepali border as a contributing factor aiding trans-Himalayan trade in wildlife organs. Researchers also claim to have found evidences of shatoosh, the wool of the endangered Tibetan antelope, and musk trade through Kadari, the only road linked to Tibet, the Tibetan Autonomous Region of China, and other remote passes across the Himalayas. Musk used in perfumes and cosmetics is taken from the gland of the male musk deer. Shatoosh is woven into expensive ring shawls, so called because they are so fine that an entire shawl can be pulled through a finger ring. 2 years ago, officials confiscated a postal pack containing 130 kilograms, about 286 pounds of tiger bones in Humla, Nepal. The contraband was thought to be on its way to Tibet or China, where demand for traditional Chinese medicines made out of tiger bones is very high. And Nepal isn't the only place you can find illegal illegal contraband, Dr. Baruti M.F. Galdikas, co-founder and president of the Orangutan Foundation International, has called on eBay, the internet auction company, to discontinue all future internet auctions which offer for sale orangutan skulls or other body parts. During the week of January 16th, eBay allowed a posting by a private Malaysian party of an orangutan trophy skull for sale to the highest bidder. The selling or trading in orangutan body parts is an illegal practice under CITES convention as well as under United States law. Even though an individual concerned about this practice contacted eBay about this illegal act, eBay did not discontinue the posting and responded by email saying that there was nothing they could do unless contacted by law enforcement. OFI has officially written to eBay requesting their future pledge not to allow the posting of any endangered species body part for auction purposes. OFI has also asked Mr. Jamie Rappaport, director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, to review eBay's current practices for monitoring the posting for sale or trade of endangered and vulnerable species body parts. Dr. Gadilka said, "Passivity on the part of any e-commerce provider with regard to the sale or trade of an endangered species opens up a dangerous new avenue of commerce for illegal poaching and trade. Online auctions and other means for poachers and traders to make illegal e-commerce sales impedes worldwide conservation efforts to save endangered species. Orangutans native to Indonesia and Malaysia and Borneo are listed as an endangered or vulnerable species by World Environmental Organizations. Today there are less than 15,000 orangutans in the wild. Poaching, illegal trade, and rainforest destruction are the major factors causing the decline of wild orangutan populations." And finally, Dr. Gadilka said that eBay more carefully screen its e-commerce postings when their site lists any items related to plants and animals, especially endangered species. If you'd like further information on how to save wild orangutans in the wild, contact the Orangutan Foundation International at 310-207-1655. That phone number again, 310-207-1655, or at the web, www.orangutan.org. That's orangutan.org. And bad news for California abalone. Well, we read that story on kelp harvesting. Here's a related story. In late in 1999, the Department of Fish and Game Shellfish Pathology Lab in Bodega Bay, California, confirmed that Rickettsiales-like bacterium was the cause of the withering foot syndrome. This disease is fatal to abalone, affects wild abalone populations along the southern and central California coast, and strongly influenced regulators to close the abalone fishery south of San Francisco. Abalone in Northern California are now at risk because abalone farms may be introducing the parasite into wild populations. The extent of the problem seems to be dependent on how well the parasite does in the colder northern waters. And we want to thank California Diving News for that article. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced Thursday it has listed the Santa Barbara County population of California tiger salamanders as endangered on an emergency basis. The emergency listing is effective for 240 days. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also issued a proposal to permanently list the population as endangered. The purpose of the emergency rule provision of the act is to prevent a species from becoming extinct by affording them immediate protection while the normal listing process is being followed. According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regional manager, Michael Spear, the tiger salamander exists only in 12 to 15 square miles of Santa Barbara County's 2,738 square miles, and there are fewer than 14 breeding ponds for the species left. It faces a serious and immediate threat of extinction. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service considered listing the California tiger salamander in 1994. Although the agency decided listing was warranted, it was delayed by the need to address higher priority species. Since then, Santa Barbara County has undergone rapid land use changes. Many areas once used as cattle pasture are being converted to intensive agricultural uses, such as vineyards and row crop production. Other lands are being developed for housing. Of all the remaining breeding sites in Santa Barbara under consideration for conversion, Spear said, it says all of the remaining breeding sites are under consideration for conversion. Spear said these land uses could cause elimination of this species by degrading the breeding ponds and destroying upland small mammals and their associated burrow systems that tiger salamanders rely upon for survival. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife says that the Santa Barbara salamander population could become extinct within a year without protection. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and environmental groups have reached a tentative agreement over a three-year-old lawsuit to protect critical habitat for piping plovers, an endangered migratory bird with breeding grounds in the United States and Canada. The agreement designates critical habitat for breeding populations in the Great Lakes and the Great Plains. It's great progress that we've been able to reach this agreement and protect the dwindling populations of plovers in the United States, said Bill Snape, vice president for the law at Defenders of Wildlife. But it's disheartening to know that the birds also breed in Canada, and as of today, they're not protected there. The minute they cross the border, their chance for survival plummets. And Idaho urbanites may have an opportunity to spot wolves close to home. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is working to confirm recent reports of wolf sightings along the Boise Front. Rory Larry Herberger, Assistant Field Supervisor of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Snake River Basin Office, says his office has received several unconfirmed sightings just outside the city limits north of Boise, east of town, and south of Horseshoe Bend. The peak of wolf dispersal in central Idaho and Yellowstone recovery areas is midwinter. Given that we have received wolf sighting reports this year where none existed before, we believe that it is likely that wolves are in the area, Herberger said. The wide dispersal of gray wolves shows the success of wolf recovery efforts in Idaho. The gray wolf population has increased from 35 wolves in 1996 to over 100 wolves in 1999. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is asking the public to report any sightings. The number is 208-378-5243. That's 208-378-5243 or 208-634-1061. That's 208-634-1061. And in a study that adds a new twist to concerns about how non-native or exotic species affect ecosystems, Christopher Whalen, an avian ecologist at the Illinois Natural History Survey, and Kenneth Schmidt, a researcher at the University of Memphis, suggest the proliferation of exotic shrubs may be contributing to declining populations of some songbirds. Analyzing 6 years of data collected from 585 American robin and wood thrush nests in the 1,600-acre Morton Arboretum near Chicago, Whalen and Schmidt discovered birds that nested in exotic honeysuckle and buckthorn were almost never able to fledge young before the nests were destroyed or raided by other animals. The reason? The non-native bushes simply don't protect the nests as well as native shrubs, the pair said. But even when the birds did have a choice, they increasingly built their nests in exotic shrubs, which tend to leaf out earlier than native shrubs, researchers said. In 6 years, for example, the number of robins nesting in honeysuckle increased sixfold, from 5% to more than 30%. Wood thrushes chose exotic shrubs about half the time. Whalen said research showed that neither robin nor wood thrush nests fare well in exotic shrubs, but when a robin's nest is destroyed in an exotic bush, it usually builds the next nest in a native tree, while the wood thrush will continue to build subsequent nests in the exotics. If exotics have invaded to the same extent throughout their whole geographical range as they have in Chicago and the Midwest, and if birds are using them the way they're using them around here, my guess is it's a big problem, Whalen said. He and Schmidt acknowledged more study is needed to prove their theory, but their research published in the December issue of Conservation Biology has created some ripples in the world of ornithology. Wesley Honochka, assistant director of bird population studies at Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology, said many species of birds are not doing well in Illinois because of the destruction of tall grass prairies and deciduous forests, and this is an Associated Press story. The Colorado Wildlife Commission has approved the release of 50 more Canadian lynx into Colorado later this year. The 6-2 vote allows the State Division of Wildlife to continue with lynx recovery program begun last year. The first shipment of lynx arrived last weekend from British Columbia, Canada, and will be released in southwest Colorado this April and May. We've learned a great deal in the first year, and we will build on that knowledge as we continue with the recovery effort, said Rick Kahn, a division biologist. We feel a high percentage of females in the 14 lynx that have settled down into fairly routine patterns gives us a reasonable expectation of breeding in Colorado this spring. We need to continue with releases this spring if we are to have any confidence that they will establish breeding populations over the next 5 to 10 years. Kahn said the animals will be kept in a holding facility until they are in prime condition, then released in early spring when prey species are abundant. Ground monitoring conducted over the past month has confirmed that lynx are preying on snowshoe hares, pine squirrels, jackrabbits, and cottontails. Sounds good to me. Last year, 4 of the first 5 lynx released starved because they were not in good enough physical condition, but division biologists changed the release protocols to hold lynx at least 3 weeks and fatten them up. 8 lynx released last March all adapted well, and none starved. Another 29 animals released in May also adapted well. Last week, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service postponed for a third time a decision on whether to protect lynx under the Endangered Species Act. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has approved Indiana's first habitat conservation plan to protect the endangered least tern. The plan was developed by Synergy Corporation for the Gibson Generating Station near Princeton. Synergy can continue to operate the station while providing protection for a nesting colony of the federally endangered birds on Synergy property. When endangered least terns began nesting at Gibson Station, we were concerned the Endangered Species Act might limit or impact our ability to generate and deliver power from our largest generating station, said Tim Hayes, senior environmental scientist at Synergy. However, through close cooperation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, we have developed this HCP, which will protect and enhance tern populations while allowing us to continue providing power to our customers. With the approval of the HCP, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issued an incidental take permit to Synergy, protecting the company from potential penalties in cases of accidental injury to terns on its property. Synergy has for years voluntarily undertaken extra responsibility to safeguard the future of Indiana's only nesting colony of least terns, and the HCP will help them continue that work, according to William Hartwig of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. A dozen federal and Colorado state agencies have signed an agreement for managing and conserving black-tailed prairie dogs. Colorado Department of Natural Resources Director Greg Walcher said this memorandum of understanding reflects the state of Colorado's commitment to adopt a comprehensive proactive approach toward the species and habitat protection in partnership with federal government and in ways that recognize the importance of involving private landowners as valued participants in the effort. The purpose of the agreement is to develop and implement a program that achieves conservation of the black-tailed prairie dog in Colorado while recognizing that control is necessary and appropriate in areas where prairie dogs conflict with agriculture and other human activities. The state is hoping to avoid listing the black-tailed prairie dogs under the Endangered Species Act. Memorandum of Understanding will come into play very soon. Great news, everyone. Fred Keeley's forestry bill in California, AB 717, just passed out of the assembly with a vote of 47-27. Thank you to all your help in California. That will help in California by providing some more regulations to the California Department of Forestry. And if you want to email Fred, you can do so. fred.keeley@assembly.california.gov, or you can call him in Sacramento at 916-319-2027. Once again, that email address is fred.keeley, K-E-E-L-E-Y, @assembly.ca.gov, or his phone number again, 916-319-2027. And Indonesia's forests are disappearing even faster than studies a few years ago indicated. Despite the proclamations of previous Indonesian governments of a permanent forest estate, with 49 million hectares in protected status and another 63 million managed for sustainable production, deforestation has continued unchecked. Indeed, it has accelerated. Neither the efforts of dedicated non-governmental organizations nor the project supported by a small but persistent group of international donors has slowed the pace of forest destruction. Only a radical departure from business as usual will spare the world's fourth most populous nation the loss of their precious natural resources, which has generated an annual export earning of $3.6 billion in the last 3 years. Using 1997 satellite imagery, the Ministry of Forest and Estate Crops has produced new forest cover maps for the islands of Kalimantan, Sulawesi, and Sumatra, which show a shocking loss of more than 17 million hectares in 12 years. This is one-fourth of the total Indonesian forest cover that existed in 1985. The ministry now estimates that the nationwide annual deforestation rate is at least 1.5 million hectares, nearly twice the estimate published by the World Bank in 1994. An analysis by the bank shows that lowland dry forest, the most valuable type of Indonesian forest for logging and biodiversity conservation, is disappearing the fastest. Such forest is essentially defunct as a viable resource in Sulawesi. It is likely to be gone in Sumatra in 5 years and Kalimantan by the year 2010. From Arizona, we read that opponents of the proposed gateway community at the entrance to the Grand Canyon have filed suit to stop the development, according to the Arizona Daily Sun. The Forest Service approved a land swap that will enable the Canyon Forest Village developer to build hotel, residential, and commercial facilities in Tucson, Arizona. If you'd like more information, contact Janie Blaylock of the Western Land Exchange Project. Her email address, that's Janine, by the way, B-L-A-E-L-O-C-H at westlx.org. That's Blaylock, B-L-A-E-L-O-C-H, at westlx.org, or the phone number 206-325-3503, 206-325-3503. Here's Idaho News. Wild Wilderness reports that the Department of Justice in Idaho has dropped its cases against 15 individuals who did not pay recreation fee demo parking tickets. The program suffered additional blows when the U.S. attorney in Idaho announced she would not prosecute additional fee demo cases, and the Idaho Mountain Express called for the end of the program. Want more information about fee demo? Contact Scott Silver of Wild Wilderness. His number, 541-385-5261. That's 541-385-5261. Or mail to ssilver@wildwilderness.org. That's S-S-I-L-V-E-R at wildwilderness.org. And a federal district judge, Michael Hogan, has ruled that the Siskiyou National Forest violated the National Forest Management Act by not complying with its land management plan standard and guideline for mining operations, according to the Medford Mail Tribune. Hogan upheld the Siskiyou Regional Education Project charge that the forest had acted illegally by approving numerous mining operations without mining plans. More information? Contact Kelpie Wilson of the Siskiyou Project. Her number? 541-592-4459. That's 541-592-4459. Or email to Kelpie, K-E-L-P-I-E, at Siskiyou. That's SISKIYOU.org. Kelpie at Siskiyou.org. And the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act, H.R. 488, is off to its best start ever in the 106th Congress with 82 congressional sponsors. No current environmental proposal matches the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act for size, sweep, and sheer brassy political nerve, according to Outside Magazine. NREPA protects more than 20 million acres of federal land in the Northern Rockies bioregion as wilderness, national preserves, and biological corridors. The bill also designates 1,800 miles of new wild and scenic rivers, creates 2,300 new wildlands restoration jobs, and NREPA saves taxpayers $100 million. Contact your representative. If your House representative has not currently signed on to H.R. 488, please encourage him or her to do so. And according to the Times News, the Idaho Land Board has finally granted grazing leases to John Marvel, head of the Idaho Watershed Project. Marvel successfully bid on a number of state trust land leases across southern Idaho in an attempt to reduce the effects of livestock grazing on public lands. The board was forced to reissue the leases after the Idaho Supreme Court struck down 38 grazing lease auctions where Marvel was denied a legitimate chance of winning the bids. In last week's meeting, the board also set new guidelines for awarding leases in conflicted bids. Doesn't this show the bankruptcy of the land board, questions Marvel, where in order to protect themselves in court, they changed their own policy in the middle of a meeting. And here's some bad news from Oregon. The deputy forest supervisor for the Winnema National Forest called to say the Forest Service is going to lift their stop work order that was issued just yesterday to allow the Pelican Butte Corporation contractor to complete well pumping tests for supposedly just one more day. The more generator-powered pumping is proposed in the motorized closure area later on. We don't know when, as the Forest Service has never fully consulted on this and has never prepared any kind of NEPA document. We believe the Forest Service is proceeding with this activity anyway, as they do not believe to do so now before the critical eagle nesting begins could delay the actual ski area development by over 6 months. They also fear that we might get into court in the meantime. The Winnema National Forest says the tests they are allowing right now are needed to be completed before February 1st and expects the work to be done either Sunday or Monday, but probably on Monday, January 31st. The site of the particular well to be tested is approximately 1 mile up Forest Service Road 350 of the West Side Road. Easy access for the developer to drive up this otherwise closed road has been provided by a snowplow, a bulldozer that operated illegally in the area earlier in the week. The Forest Service is now limiting the running of the generators at the well site to the hours of 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. when they hope that eagles might be otherwise disturbed will be foraging in the adjacent Upper Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. Call this dude, man. Tell him to cease all motorized activities in the Bald Eagle Management Area, supposed to be closed January 1st through August 31st, and fully comply with the National Environmental Policy Act and the Endangered Species Act. The regional forester is Harv Forsgren, F-O-R-S-G-R-E-N. His phone number, 503-808-2200. That's 503-808-2200, or HFORSGREN/R6PNW@fs.fed.us. That's HFORSGREN/R6PNW@fs.fed.us, and tell him to get the hell out of the wildlife refuge now. Senators Richard Bryan and Harry Reid of Nevada have announced plans to introduce legislation to protect the Black Rock and High Rock regions of northwestern Nevada as a national conservation area. The purpose of the NCA is to protect the historic Applegate-Lassen Emigrant Trail and its vistas. Conservationists, including Friends of Nevada Wilderness and the Toyabe Chapter of Sierra Club, are urging the senators to include 9 wilderness study areas totaling 684,000 acres within the 1,190,999-acre HCA and designate them as wilderness. Conservationists are also asking withdrawal of the area from mineral and geothermal development. Support the Black Rock and High Rock National Conservation Area. Get in touch with your senators and tell them that you support the formation of the National Conservation Area, but add the 9 wilderness study areas that form the horizon seen from the Emigrant Trail. And a huge timber sale has been proposed in the San Juan National Forest of Colorado. The Jackson Mountain timber sale proposed by the San Juan National Forest would be among the largest offered in the state of Colorado in the last 15 years, according to Colorado Wild. The sale could log up to 15 million board feet, including part of the Turkey Creek roadless area and some of the last ponderosa pine and mixed conifer old growth forests of the San Juan. Forest Service is also wanting to build almost 5 miles of new roads and reconstruct 11 miles to complete the project. You want more information? Contact John Whitney, Colorado Wild. His number 970-382-9194. That's John at 970-382-9194. Or contact Jay Whitney at coloradowild.org. And unfortunately, that's about all the time we've got for news here on Earth First Radio. If you have any news or announcements from your bioregion that you'd like to have heard on Earth First Radio, send them to us by email, please. Our email address is cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California 95061. Be sure to send any announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you'd like more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon 97440. Once again, that's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon 97440. Remember, you can hear Earth First Radio live in Santa Cruz, California on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM every Thursday at 8 p.m. Or you can listen to Earth First Radio anywhere in the world on your computer. We're on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radioforall.net. The number 4 is stuck in there. And that's a new URL, folks, so be sure and write that one down. www.radioforall.net. All you'll need is a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Be sure to ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Earth First Radio.